Now, this one is fascinating. Imagine this as a headline. Every New Zealander from the next financial year will get a set amount in their bank account each week, regardless of income. Not that it's happening, but would a universal basic income, or UBI, work? It raises its head every so often, doesn't it, this issue, the latest being in stuff by Susan Edmonds. Interesting thing about this policy, universal basic income, is that it's supported by people on all sides of the spectrum. Mark Zuckerberg is a supporter, so is Bishop Desmond Tutu. Milton Friedman advocated a basic income in his 1980 book, Free to Choose. Those against say it would be an enormous cost to society. Supporters say it would wind back the often dehumanising effect of benefit targeting and provide a cushion to lessen the impact of the casualisation of work. We've got a guest on this very shortly, an economist. Catherine, what do you think? Some say we have a UBI already in the case for the over 65s.
Yes, exactly. We've got a template already, actually, which is
unique in the world
and open to everybody. I think it's so interesting, and I think it's very complex. It feels like a good idea, right? I read the article about Finland's experiment with this for 2 years and how people responded to it. And the thing I took away from that was that everyone that was on it went, what it gave them was certainty. And it wasn't just about, oh, I've just been given free money.
It wasn't about free money, it was about certainty. Can you explain that just a wee bit more for us?
Well, that it made a whole lot of people go, I know I'm getting this much money every week coming into my account. So their stress went down and they were allowed to, of course, earn on top of it. So for a lot of people, what it did was they went, I'm going to earn more. I know I've got this amount coming in. I'm going to earn more. And then because they weren't, dinged, you know, they didn't lose that UBI when they made money on top of it. So they went, I've got this much, and it inspired them to earn more and work.
You'd think the opposite happened, but that model
actually
said, what do you make of this, Rodney High? What camp do you fall in? Could you see a universal basic income in some form?
Yes. The tricky thing is, you know, the some form.
You support it. You support it.
Oh, always. Yes. And so you'd sweep away all of welfare. And but then the tricky thing becomes this. I mean, typically what Milton Friedman was advocating was a negative income tax. And the tricky thing is this. It's where you pitch the basic income. How high is that?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's where the argument is. And the difficulty is if you pitch it too high, you create a disincentive to actually take low-level jobs or those first jobs. You know, people leaving high school or university say, gee, I just go surfing on the UBI. I don't have to work.
But that doesn't matter really, does it?
It does matter.
And even according to Milton
Friedman. What do you mean it doesn't matter?
No, because the thing is that if it's universal, most people will be incentivized, as Catherine says, but you'll always get those people who might want to do it for creative practices, artistic practices, hell, even surf couching for a while. Who cares?
No, you do care, because most life cycles, you start off at a job that doesn't pay very well. But it teaches you about work, it gives you work experience, and then you move on. You know, you don't stay surfing all your life or sitting on the couch all your life. So you don't want to pitch it too high. The difficulty is if you pitch it too low, then it's not achieving its effect, which it isn't livable. And then typically, of course, as you move off the UBI, you introduce tax. And then the question is, how sharply does that rebate what people are earning? And the problem is this, if you have the UBI quite high, it means your tax rate is going to be very high. It might be 50 cents in the dollar.
Yep.
And so you have that very hard effect. And when you look at our welfare rates, I've done this several times, it makes bringing in a UBI very, very hard because, you know, you can very quickly find yourself on welfare given your need even better off than, you know, a basic wage.
What do you make your response to that, Catherine?
I'm just not sure about that because I think at the moment the problem that seems to be with benefits is that disincentivizes people to work in a way because they're dinged, right? They're penalized for when they try and make money on top of it. So, and I think human nature being what it is, there's always going to be a variety of responses to this. But I think if it's not penalised and you're on a UBI and you're not penalised for making more money, some people, as Wallace said, will absolutely try and make more money and be fine with that. Others won't. But that's, I mean, it's not going to be so high that people are going to be able to live on it really comfortably and go, this is amazing.
Yeah, people are already texting in the type of UBI. I think what did the Opportunities Party, I think they suggested a UBI for families with young children, providing a substantial lift to those families, is a potent boost to their ability to nurture children. So they recommended up to $10,000 per annum. With us, we have an economist, Dr. Eric Crampton, an economist at the New Zealand Initiative. Kia ora, Eric.
Good afternoon.
So you've heard both of our panellists. They both support a universal basic income. Rodney Hyde and Catherine Burnett, both with caveats and perhaps for maybe different reasons. What about you?
Well, I'm slightly opposed to the things, but for somewhat complicated reasons. If we look to some work by economist Kevin Milligan, who's a public econ guy at the University of British Columbia, he says that you can only choose two of the following three options with any UBI. It's a trilemma. So you can have, they're all three nice things, but you can only have two of them, and you have to decide which one of these things you want to throw away. So the first one is a high enough basic income that few people on current benefits are made worse off.
Gotcha.
You have to remember that a lot of people are on multiple benefits if they have lots of different kinds of hardship, and those can add up to being a lot of money. A second one is that a low phase-out rate, so that lower income workers don't face sharp penalties for accepting work. So it has to phase out reasonably slowly. So if you look at working for families, that phases out reasonably slowly, but it's nowhere near starting at what some of the UBI rates would be. And the third one is a cost that isn't massively higher than current spending on benefit programs. So you can have a really high basic income with a low phase-out rate, but it's going to be extraordinarily expensive. You could have a high basic income with a cost that isn't massively higher, but it'd have to have such a harsh phase-out rate that it would really disincentivize work. It's all these messes. So it's really a trade-off then between targeted assistance that helps people that we know are in need, or these universal schemes that I think just aren't politically sustainable. So Rodney had made a very good case for getting rid of a lot of current benefits and just having a UBI. I worry that because there would be a lot of people who would, well, maybe not a lot of people, but enough people who would be put into pretty harsh hardship because of that, because they're already getting a lot more than that with layered benefits for multiple hardships, that we'd have a welfare system quickly reemerge on top of a UBI. So then you have all of the problems of the existing welfare system, as well as all of the cost of a UBI.
Sure. Look, one of the reasons why this does keep coming up, and not the only reason, but one of the reasons is this. It's because of the increased casualization globally. So you're getting people who are, you know, putting jobs together, and they're earning. They are earning, but just not enough. Yeah, you can respond to that, Catherine, but they're not earning quite enough to make ends meet. So if you have this underlying cushion that society provides, that is the philosophy, you know, that is the idea. Can you see how that might galvanize some governments to enact it, Eric?
I can see that maybe makes a case for a very low UBI.
Yeah.
But we weren't really seeing the evidence for that yet in like the work that the Productivity Commission came out with last week on future of work issues. We're not in the state of the world yet where you're getting lots of people who are in long-term hardship in these kinds of multiple work scenarios.
Any response to that, Rodney?
I think the trouble with casualization is we make it very expensive to employ someone. So if you're a small business, you think very, very hard about employing someone because basically if it goes wrong, you could be bankrupted.
Well, you need a UBI because you're on such a low wage. Because you're employed with such low wages that you need some top up anyway.
Well, you know, that's an odd way of looking at it, because what you're really talking about is productivity, aren't you? And you have to ask yourself, if you want high wages, if you want to live in a high-wage economy, you've got to live in a productive economy. And then you have to ask yourself, does guaranteeing young people a benefit make an economy more productive or less productive? And that's the trouble.
Okay. Dr. Eric Crampton, economist at the New Zealand Initiative, thank you very, very much for your time.